Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate
vasudevaya. Kirtan party. Today's topic, ecstasy and pure love. As this week, coming back from your trip break, this 1 week is our preparation for 10th canto, right?
That's right.
So you had the orientation on Monday, and these four classes the rest of the week are different aspects of preparation and hearing the 10th canto, understanding some of the emotions and some of the characteristics of pure hearing about Krishna. And so today's verse is from the 4th canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, 12th chapter, entitled Dhruva Maharaj Goes Back to Godhead. And we'll read text 18. Bhaktim haro bhagavati pravahana jarsham.
Bhaktim haro bhagavati pravahana jarsham.
Ananda bhaspa kalaya muhur ardhyamana. Viklidhyamana hridaya pulaka chitango. Natmanam asmaradasha viti mukta linga. Please chant. Bhaktim haro bhagavati pravahan ajasham. Ananda baspa kalaya muhur ardhyamana. Viklidhyamana hridaya pulaka chitango. Natmanam asmaradasha viti mukta linga.
Bhaktim haro bhagavati pravahan ajasram.
Bhaktim haro bhagavati pravahan ajasram.
Ananda baspa kalaya muhur
ardhyamana. Ananda baspa kalaya muhur ardhyamana. Viklidhyamana hridaya pulaka chitango.
Natmanam
asmaradasa viti mukta linga. Bhaktim haro bhagavati pravahana jashram. Ananda baspa kalaya muhur ardhyamana. Viklidhyamana hridaya pulaka chitango. Natmanam asmaradasha viti mukta linga. Bhaktim haro bhagavati pravahana jarsham. Ananda baspa kalaya muhur ardhyamana. Viklidhyamana hridaya pulaka chitango. Natmanamasmadadashavitimuktalinga. Bhaktim haro bhagavati pavahana jasham. Ananda baspakalaya muhardyamana. Vikridyamana hridaya pulaka chitango. Natmana masmaradasha viti muktalinga. Bhaktim, devotional service. Harau, unto Hari. Bhagavati, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Pravahan, constantly engaging in. Ajastram, always. Ananda, blissful. Baspakalaya, by a stream of tears. Muhu, again and again. Ardyamana, being overcome. Viklidyamana, melting. Hridaya, his heart. Pulaka, standing of hairs. Achita, covered. Anga, his body. Na, not. Atmanam, body. Asmarat, he remembered. Aso, he. Iti, thus. Mukta linga, free from the subtle body. Translation: because of his transcendental bliss, incessant tears flowed from his eyes. His heart melted, and there was shivering and standing of the hairs all over his body. Thus transformed in a trance of devotional service, Dhruva Maharaj completely forgot his bodily existence, and thus he immediately became liberated from material bondage. Purport. It's a rather lengthy purport. If we could pass around the mic, a couple sentences each, I'll start. Due to constant engagement in devotional service, hearing, chanting, remembering, worshipping the deity, etc., as prescribed in 9 varieties, there are different symptoms which appear in the body of a devotee. These 8 bodily transformations, which indicate that a devotee is already liberated within himself, are called Ashta Sattvika Vikara. Anyone else? Thank you.
When a devotee completely forgets his bodily existence, he should be understood to be liberated. He's no longer engaged in the body.
Encaged.
The example is given that when a coconut becomes completely dry, the coconut pulp within the coconut shell separates from the bondage of the shell and the outer covering. By moving the dry coconut, one can hear that the pulp within is no longer attached to the shell.
Similarly, when one is fully absorbed in devotional service, he is completely disconnected from the two material body, subtle and gross body. Dhruva Maharaj actually attained this state of mind by constantly discharging devotional service. He has already been described as Mahabhagwat. For others, one becomes a Mahabhagwat or a first class pure devotee. These symptoms are not visible. Lord Chaitanya, all these symptoms, the Kaur Haridas also exhibit of them, and there are many pure devotees who manifest such body symptoms. They are not to be imitated, but when one is actually advanced, these symptoms are exhibited. At that time, it is to be understood that a devotee is materially free. Of course, from the beginning of devotional service, the path of liberation immediately opens. Just as the coconut taken from the tree, maybe begins to dry. It simply takes some time for the shell and pulp to separate from one another.
Ladies, please.
An important word in this verse is mukta linga. Mukta means liberated, and linga means the subtle body. When a man dies, he quits the gross body, but the subtle body of mind, intelligence, and ego carries into a new body. While existing in the present body, the same subtle body carries him from one stage of life to another. For example, from childhood to boyhood, and by mental development. The mental condition of a baby is different from that of a boy. The mental condition of a boy is different from that of a young man, and the mental condition of a young man is different from that of an old man. So at death, the process of changing bodies takes place due to the subtle body. The mind, the intelligence, and ego carry the soul from one gross body to another. This is called transmigration of the soul. But there is another stage. When one becomes liberated, even from the subtle body, at that time the living entity is competent and fully prepared to be transferred to the transcendental or spiritual world.
The description of the bodily symptoms of Sri Dhruva Maharaj makes it apparent that he became perfectly fit to be transferred to the spiritual world. One can experience the distinction between the subtle and gross bodies even daily. In a dream, one's gross body is lying on the bed, while the subtle body carries the soul, the living entity, to another atmosphere. But because the gross body has to be continued, the subtle body comes back and settles in the present gross body. Therefore, one has to become free from the subtle body also. This freedom is known as mukta linga.
Oma Ganantamananda Saganandana Salakaya Takshu Tamina Tasmai Shri Gurve Nama Shri Chaitanya Manovistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Tadati Swapadantikam Vanchakalpataribhascha Kripasanduvyavacha Paditanam Bhavani Vyo Vaishnave Vyo Namo Nama Namaste Giriraja Shri Gurudam Ramani Shesha Klesha Vashaya Paramadadayane. So this subject, ecstasy and pure love, is a very elevated subject in the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition. And first of all, we need to understand the terminology, because the title, Ecstasy in Pure Love, makes this ecstasy different from any other use of that word. We're somewhat accustomed to this word being used in the English language with its own certain meanings. And the way it's being used here, translated from the word bhava, is different than the common usage of that of the word ecstasy. Just like we may say, oh, Prabhu, you look very ecstatic today. But we don't normally say, oh, Prabhu, you're in bhava today. Because we understand bhava to be a very highly elevated position and transcendental love for Krishna. Although the devotee may be experiencing bhava, but again, even our common usage of the word ecstasy may be confused somewhat with the actual meaning what Prabhupada uses throughout his books. Again, the ecstasy or bhava of pure love is a very high elevated topic. So sometimes, usually ecstasy is given to something as a reaction to something material, something influences something to become ecstatic. Just like the common usage, if you look it up in the dictionary, so-and-so was ecstatic when they received, you know, $100 in the mail. So that ecstatic or that ecstasy is different than what is being spoken of here. Sometimes I remember, even we, like I said, you know, we look at somebody, we say, oh, you're ecstatic. And what is the influence of that? I remember once, it was a Gorpanim feast back in the 80s, and I had cooked this huge feast, and there was lots of sweets, and there was actually unlimited sweets at this feast. And by the end, we were all seemingly ecstatic, but it may have been an influence of sugar. Or it may have been the influence of the day and prasadam, taking prasadam. But at least for myself, I remember laying on the floor and Niranjana Swami comes in, and I had a gallon, almost empty gallon of sweet rice laying by me, and he said, "Madhava, you look ecstatic." And I felt ecstatic. But was I ecstatic? Was I in ecstasy of what Dhruva Maharaj is experiencing here? I doubt it. Or I can say, no, I was not. So I just wanted to define our meaning or what we're talking about today, ecstasy. And again, if we read this, his incessant tears flowed from his eyes, his heart melted, and there was shivering and standing of the hairs all over his body. So these are ecstatic symptoms. And we could experience these based on some material situation. Just like when we become frightened, very quickly, sometimes our hairs will stand on end. And so we could say, is that ecstasy? Or is it not? So the factor is, when these symptoms appear to us in the material realm, it is usually influenced by another circumstance. And similarly, the circumstance in which Dhruva Maharaj is experiencing these ecstatic symptoms, or other great devotees, Lord Chaitanya, the Goswamis, when we hear of their ecstatic symptoms, it is influenced also by something, but it is of a spiritual nature. The nectar of devotion. And again, this topic is so deep and broad. It's like when you hear about icebergs, what you can see is very small compared to the vastness under the water surface. So this topic is so vast. We certainly can't speak on it fully. I just wanted to cover some of the definition and then some of Rupa Goswami's explanation in the Nectar of Devotion. This book, if you look at the chapter titles throughout the book, you'll see this word over and over again: ecstasy and pure love, symptoms of ecstasy, characteristics of ecstasy, circumstances in which ecstasy, again and again. This is the topic of this book. And one particular chapter, chapter 17, gives us a very good understanding of this. At least in our preliminary stages of understanding Krishna consciousness. And he first says to clarify the previous chapters, the symptoms of devotional service were explained along with the instructions as how they can be executed with our present senses, gradually rising to the platform of ecstasy and spontaneous love. And the two kinds of devotional service, namely devotional service through regulative principles, which we call sadhana bhakti, and those in spontaneous love, which we call raghunuga bhakti, were discussed. Now this is interesting. Within the stage of regulative principles of devotional service, there are two divisions, namely executive and effective. So this is interesting. When we hear about the process of devotional service, we hear of the stages, just like in the yoga process, there are stages, the eightfold, or eight angas, eightfold process of yoga. And the first is yam, which is you control the senses. The senses are controlled. It's like today is a Ekadasi, and there'll be spaghetti. But we know we are going to control our senses, and we will not eat the spaghetti today. So that's yam. Then niyam is we follow certain activities in a regulative way to again attain a higher goal. Then asan, sitting postures, breath control, and then they come to the fifth stage, which is called pratyahara. Now pratyahara is translated as sense control, which yam is also translated as. But there is a vast difference between the yam sense control and the pratyahara sense control. The sense control in the yam stage is like I will not eat this spaghetti today. I'm not going to do it because I'm following these principles. I won't do it. But inside, I'm thinking, although I'm yum, I'm thinking, yum. I very much like the spaghetti. In the pratyahara stage, that although the senses are controlled, there is not that, you know, that stage that we have to think, oh, I can't do this today, I can't do that, you know, I can't do this or that. It's no, I am engaged in devotional service. I am actually on a higher level. There's other activities that automatically free you from those other things. We all have this experience when we come to Krishna consciousness and we hear about the four regulative principles. At first, that first day or first learning about it, we may think, oh, this is very difficult. How can I do it? But after some time, the devotees can attest after months or years, decades doing this, it's like, yeah, I don't have to think I have to control my senses of eating meat today. I never have to do that because it's on a higher level. It's no longer, that's the yum stage, but it's on a higher stage. And then dharana, dhyana, samadhi, these higher stages of yoga are there, where firm concentration, very high concentration, meditation, and absorption in the goal. So similarly, in devotional service, there is this multi-tiered level of attaining higher stages. And many of you will know, it's quoted in the Nectar of Devotion. Sanatan Goswami also quotes it through some of his teachings. But originally, it was in the teachings of from Lord Chaitanya to Sanatan Goswami, where he quotes, Ado shada tata sadhu sangata bhajana kriya tato narta nivritti shat. So this verse is a very famous verse among Gaudiya Vaishnavas, in which it's teaching us the different levels. So what is the first? First, there must be some faith, shraddha. And then one becomes interested in associating with devotees. So we have faith in the process, and then we associate with devotees. And then we are engaged in service. We are initiated by the spiritual master, engaged in service. And by that service, associating with devotees, we become purified. We start to get rid of certain bad qualities, bad inherent anartas is called, the bad qualities. They start becoming freed from us. And then, similar to the yoga process, then nishta is there. Nishta is also translated as faith, but it is different from shraddha. Shraddha is that initial faith. Nishta is that firm, steady faith. From once you attain nishta, there's no falling back. You attain this very strong faith that there's, and from that point on, then the higher stages of bhakti can occur, and that's where it changes from the sadhana, or executive stages, we're executing things. We are controlling the senses. We are engaging in service given to by the spiritual master. We are associating with devotees. We are doing service. We are hearing about Krishna. These things we're doing as a practice. But then once nishta comes, then we develop this firm attachment. We're actually tasting devotional service at that stage, ruchi, and then asakti, we're firmly attached to it. Then only then is the bhava stage attained. So we can see how, you know, yeah, I'm struggling to get out of the shraddha stage sometimes, or you know, being steady in service, we struggle. So we can see that ecstasy, although it's used quite commonly, it is very elevated. And from this bhava, then prema, pure love. And that's what the pure ecstasy and pure love. It's bhava in prema, or within the prema, and that is directly in association with Krishna and Krishna's topics. So Prabhupada is saying in this purport today that Dhruva Maharaj attained this by these activities, by engaging in these nine processes of devotional service. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam. We have this very chalked out, easy method for advancing on this path from faith to associating with devotees, to taking initiation, to higher and higher. So the activities are there. A little further, there was a nice list Rupa Goswami gives. Yeah, characteristics. And here is some of the characteristics that even on the lower stages, we can aspire to. So he gives a list of nine things. He says, we're always anxious to use your time in devotional service of the Lord. He does not like to be idle. They want service always, 24 hours a day without deviation. So this is like something we may not be there yet, but we aspire for it. So by practicing, even though we can say, yes, we're trying to get to the ecstatic platform, we first have to know what that platform is, and then we aspire for it. So we're anxious. I'm anxious to do something in this devotional service for Krishna. Two, you're always reserved and perseverant. It means we're in control of our senses, basically. We're not wild. We're not, you know. And sometimes that's, you know, we're confused of, unsettledness as being in ecstasy. Prabhupada one time, was it Govindadasi? Govindadasi saw a picture of Prabhupada. I think it was his passport picture, and she said, "Oh, Prabhupada, you look very morose in this picture," something like that. Was it morose? Yeah. And he said, "No, that's ecstasy." So it's not always, I'm in ecstasy, It's reserved, perseverant. This is a characteristic of ecstasy. Always detached from material attraction. Pratyadhara. You do not long for any material respect in return for your activities. You're always certain that Krishna will bestow his mercy upon you. You're always eager to serve the Lord faithfully. You're very attached to the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. You're very eager to describe the transcendental activities and qualities of the Lord. And you're very happy to live in a place where the Lord's pastimes are performed, Mathura, Vrindavan, or Dwarka. So these are some of the things we can aspire to, and we can take part in some of these things. Yes, we can visit the Holy Dham, and we can feel some of that influence of the Holy Dham upon us. And when we're engaging in service, we should be in this mentality of understanding. This is a very high activity. It's a gift. Krishna is giving us this gift. So, again, this is a very preliminary understanding of ecstasy and pure love, and how much I can explain anyway is very limited, for it is a very elevated topic for me. But today is also, and he assures me it was not planned, but today is the disappearance day of Madhavendra Puri. And Madhavendra Puri is unique in our disciplic line because from Madhavendra Puri, this understanding of spontaneous attraction to Krishna in this mood of worshipping Radha and Krishna in conjugal love, this was his gift to the parampara. And in the beginning of Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a verse, Jaya Sri Madhavendra Puri Krishna Prema Pura Bhakti Kalpa Taru Tenu Pratama Ankura. All glories to Sri Madhavendra Puri, the storehouse of all devotional service unto Krishna. He is a desire tree of devotional service, and it is in him that the seed of devotional service was first fructified. In the purport, Prabhupada says, gives a little explanation where Madhavendrapuri is from. And Madhavendrapuri, he was the spiritual master of Ishwarpuri, Nityananda Prabhu, and Advaita Prabhu. So you can see it's, you know, right there within the disciplic succession. But he says, the process of worship in the disciplic succession of Madhvacharya was full of ritualistic ceremonies. So we know the sampradayas, Brahma, Narada, Vyas, Madhvacharya. And then Madhvacharya, from him became many regulative devotional practices, and it was almost diluted to the point that it was seen as ritualistic. And Prabhupada says, with hardly a sign of love for Godhead, Sri Madhavendrapuri was the first person in that disciplic succession to exhibit the symptoms of love of Godhead, and the first to write a poem beginning with the words, Ai Dina Dayadranata, O Supremely Merciful Personality of Godhead. And so today it's fitting that we hear a little bit about Madhavendrapuri, his devotional service, and this direct relationship with him in ecstatic love for his Lord Gopal. So this is detailed greatly in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, fourth chapter of the Madhya Lila, where the activities of Madhavendrapuri are described. And it is one of the sweetest pastimes in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and certainly for devotees who are attracted to deity worship, this is a must in their cultivation of that desire, of that devotional service. So Lord Chaitanya was touring South India, and he came upon the temple of Gopinath, which became famous as Kshirachora Gopinath. And I'll get to the translation of that in a moment. But there, he started to hear of the pastimes of Madhavendrapuri. And so Madhavendrapuri was in Vrindavan and at the foot of Govardhan Hill. And he was, you know, as a Goswami, as a mendicant, he would sleep under a tree. He did not have a business or anything. He was just chanting and performing devotional service. And one day he was sitting under the tree near Govardhan, and a coward boy came up to him. And he said, what are you doing? You're not eating. You know, nobody in my village ever, you know, goes hungry. Here's some milk for you. So Madhavendrapuri was very happy. Oh, thank you very much. And he drank the milk. He relished it. It was such a wonderful tasting milk. He never experienced that before. He was so happy. And then that night, though, he had a dream. And Krishna came to him in the dream. In the dream, he could recognize Krishna as being the same boy who came up to him. Although he could not recognize him when he was awake, he recognized him in the dream. And the boy said, "Oh, I am trapped in the forest here. I want you to please release me from this. I was hidden here when Vrindavan was under attack from Muslim rulership, and the pujaris hid me in the forest, in the bushes, and I have been lost ever since. So please, you come and take me from this situation." So let me find. There's something very nice where he's telling Madhavendrapuri. He says, "For many days I have been observing you, and I have been wondering, when will Madhavendrapuri come here to serve me? I have accepted your service due to your ecstatic love for me. Thus I shall appear, and by my audience all fallen souls will be delivered. My name is Gopal. I am the lifter of Govardhan Hill. I was installed by Vajra. And here, I am the authority. Vajra is the grandson, one of the grandsons of Krishna. When the Muslims attacked, the priest who was serving me hid me in this bush in the jungle. Then he ran away out of fear. Since the priest went away, I've been staying in this bush. It is not good. It is very good that you have come here. Now just remove me with care. After saying this, the boy disappeared. Then Madhavendrapuri woke up and began to consider his dream. And he began to lament, I saw Lord Krishna directly, but I could not recognize him. Thus he fell down on the ground in ecstatic love. So that, again, this ecstasy he was experiencing was a direct relation to his association with Krishna. In one of the sections of the Nectar of Devotion, it's said there that the ecstatic love can be developed in two ways. One is the direct mercy of Krishna, and the second is by association with devotees. So here, Madhavendrapuri received this ecstatic love directly from Krishna. So Madhavendrapuri, he woke, and then after he cried for some time and lamented that he could not recognize Krishna in his wakeful state, then he thought, okay, Krishna has given me an order, and I must do it. So he gathered all the villagers, and he told them the story of their dream, and they were like, they were ecstatic because of their association with the devotee. This is the second way you can become ecstatic. So they became very happy, very excited that, oh, Gopal has returned. And so they hacking through the jungle, and then the deity was found, and then a very elaborate ceremony took place of installing the deity. It's such a wonderful description is there. The deity was installed on top of Govardhan Hill. And still you go to Govardhan, although Gaudiya Vaishnava is following the footsteps of Lord Chaitanya, we do not go on top of Govardhan Hill. We only circumambulate. This was started by Lord Chaitanya. So Madhavendrapuri, this was not part of his the culture at that time. So he installed and built this temple on top of Govardhan Hill. And it's the deity of Gopal. So it's still there. If you go to Jatipur, you can see the big temple atop the hill. And there's a staircase for those who want to go. They can go up and take darshan. But again, the Gaudiya Vaishnavas do not go up the hill. We pay obeisances to the temple, the chakra. So this was such a wonderful pastime, and he was so engaged in ecstatic love, engaging other people in the service of the deity, putting persons in charge of the deity worship. And then he had another dream. And in that dream, Gopal came to him again. He said, you know, I've been out in the woods for so long, and I am still very hot. Even though you bathed me with nice cool water, I'm still very hot. What I would like now is sandalwood paste. And I want a lot of it. Not just a little. I want a lot of sandalwood paste. And I need to be covered in this sandalwood paste and just let it sit there for a day. You know, we have the Chandan Yatra in our ISKCON temples. It's from this type of deity worship. This where in the summertime the deities become very hot, and the chandan is naturally very cooling. And if you put it on the deities, their body becomes cooled. I remember we used to do this, and especially you can notice it with brass deities. We used to do this in Boston, and I remember taking the chandan off, and the deity would look, you know, darker, much darker, like almost like when you look at cold ice or like black ice. It's like becomes. And I remember for days after, even though we were bathing the deity in regular temperature water, I remember Gopi Balava feeling still very cold. For days after, days and days. So it's such a wonderful service, that the deity wants it, wants to be cool in the summer. So it asks Madhavendra, you go and you get some. But where could you get it at that time? There's no internet. You can't order it online. You have to go to South India to get the sandalwood. So in his ecstasy, and again, the ecstasy is an effective, it's a result of his actual love for Krishna. It is a symptom. He said, yeah, I'll go. I'll walk myself. And so it's described for thousands of miles he walked. He obtained the sandalwood, and for thousands of miles he was walking back. But he was very old at this time as well. And on his way back, he passed through another temple, the Gopinath temple. And there he was so very happy to see this deity. And this temple was famous for... Well, it wasn't famous at that time, but toward the end of the night, they would offer sweet rice or kheer to the deity. And Madhavendra Puri, what was his thought? His thought was, I'm a servant of Gopal. I've never had a deity before. Let me see, how are they serving the deity? And then he saw the priest coming out with this nice plate of many different pots of sweet rice, of kheer. And Madhavendra Puri thought for a moment. He said, I really would like to taste this kheer so I can make the same preparation for my Gopal. And soon as he thought this, being a humble Vaishnava, he thought, how condemned I am to think like this. Hadn't even been offered to the deity yet, and I'm thinking of eating it. So he's teaching us, first of all, our rules and regulations of deity worship, that when we are cooking for the deity, we're not thinking of tasting. We're thinking of simply the offering. But he thought like this. But Gopal and Gopinath, knowing the heart of Madhavendra Puri, Gopinath came in the dream of the priest that night. He didn't go to Madhavendra Puri, but he came in the dream of the priest. And in his dream, he dreamt, there is a sannyasi in your village, and I have stolen, I've taken, you offered me those pots of sweet rice, but you didn't notice that when you took them back, there was one missing. I kept one behind my cloak. You didn't notice it. And so the priest woke up, and he was astonished at this dream, and he peeked into the deity room, and he looked behind the cloak, and there it was, a pot of sweet rice. It was amazing. He was like, he felt, oh, wow, he felt that ecstasy at that point. And so then he just went out into the marketplace. Anyone named Madhavendra Puri here? Is there anyone named Madhavendra Puri? The deity has stolen sweet rice for you. And you know, everybody was like, wow, what is, because Gopinath was the deity of the village. And so when everybody was looking, who is this person? Who is that person? And Madhavendra Puri, he kind of was like, you know, he wasn't going to show it because he was still feeling morose that, I have thought of eating that sweet rice before it was offered. And so the priest did find him finally, and he said, this sweet rice was stolen for you by the deity. And Madhavendra Puri became worried. He said, oh no, once people find out about this, they're all going to be coming around and touching my feet and all these things. I don't want any of this. But he was still very happy to receive this. And not only did he take the kheer in great relishment, but for those who have been to India or have seen some things come back from India, these little clay pots, they're very thin, rolled by hand, clay pots of kheer. So he crushed it up. He crushed the pot up, and then every day he would take a little bit of that pot. His first intuition was to leave because he knew there were going to be flocks of people coming, and so Actually, I got some of these mixed up. This happened on his way to the sandalwood. So he did leave town. He got the sandalwood, and on the way back, he again went through this village of Gopinath. And at that time, Gopinath and Gopal came to him in a dream and said, or Gopal came to him in a dream and said, "Listen, you've been carrying this big load of sandalwood." And again, there's not like bullock carts. He's a sannyasi. He doesn't have a motor rickshaw or money to pay somebody to carry it for him. He's carrying it on his back. He's elderly, thousands of miles. And so the deity, feeling that he's doing this in ecstasy love, and when we talked a couple weeks ago how Krishna feels equally indebted to his devotees. So he said, "Don't carry it back for me. If you put this the sandalwood on Gopinath, then it will be just like putting it on me." So then they had a festival, Chandan festival there. And so this was all such a wonderful pastime. And so after Lord Chaitanya had told this or heard this in the temple, there are some very wonderful verses at the end. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu placed the standard of Madhavendrapuri's intense love before Nityananda for judgment. "All his loving activities are uncommon," Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said. "Indeed, one is struck with wonder to hear of these activities. Sri Madhavendrapuri used to remain alone. He was completely renounced and always very silent." See, these are some of the symptoms, those nine symptoms that Rupa Goswami listed. Very reserved. This is ecstasy. Very silent. "He was uninterested in everything material, and for fear of talking about mundane things, he always lived without a companion. After receiving the transcendental orders of Gopal, this great personality traveled thousands of miles just to collect sandalwood by begging. Although Madhavendrapuri was hungry, he would not beg for food to eat. This renounced person carried a load of sandalwood for the sake of Sri Gopal. Without considering his personal comforts, Madhavendrapuri carried one mound, about 82 pounds of sandalwood." So there are 50-pound bags of sugar in the kitchen. And if you just, after class, if you just want, put one on your back and just stand there for a few moments, that's only two-thirds of the weight that Madhavendrapuri was holding. And he was much older than us. And then think about carrying that for thousands of miles. That's the weight. And that wasn't all. And 20 tolas, about 8 ounces of camphor, to smear over the body of Gopal. This transcendental pleasure was sufficient for him. So there's some more glorification of Madhavendrapuri. Here, although Madhavendrapuri did not have a farthing with him, he was not afraid to pass the toll officers. His only enjoyment was in carrying the load of sandalwood to Vrindavan for Gopal. This is the natural result of intense love of Godhead. The devotee does not consider personal inconveniences or impediments. In all circumstances, he wants to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, again, there is more glorification of Madhavendrapuri, but it is now time for Prasad Seva. But I will want to end with this one thing. At the end, Lord Chaitanya recited this verse, and in that Prabhupada alluded to in the purport we read earlier. And he says, the verse is 194, starts, "Actually, this verse was spoken by Srimati Radharani herself, and by her mercy it was manifest in the words of Madhavendrapuri. Only Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has tasted the poetry of this verse. No fourth man is capable of understanding it." This indicates, that in the purport Prabhupada says, this indicates only Srimati Radharani, Madhavendrapuri, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are capable of understanding this verse. Madhavendra Puri recited this verse again and again at the end of his material existence. Thus, uttering this verse, he attained the ultimate goal of life. And then again, it is Aindina Dayadra Natahe Matura Nata Kadava Lokshasye Hridam Tvada Loka Kataranam Daitya Brahmyatikim Karom Yaham. O my Lord, O most merciful Master, O Master of Mathura, when shall I see you again? Because my not seeing you, my agitated heart has become unsteady. O most beloved one, what shall I do now? So this is what bhava, ecstasy, and pure love looks like. So we can serve Madhavendra Puri and serve Lord Chaitanya by following in their footsteps. Thank you very much.